Path of the Storm, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
In the path of the storm, all men are fearless. Old Chinese saying. Chapter 1. Reprieve. The British Crown Colony of Hong Kong seemed crushed beneath the glare and relentless heat of the midday sun. Even for high summer, it was unusually hot, the humid air almost wet to the touch, so that the colourful crowds jamming the waterfronts scarcely moved, but jostled in buzzing and aimless confusion. But it was Sunday, and as usual the crowded harbour and anchorage was alive with craft of every description, from fussing paddle-wheeled tugs to timeless stern-sculled lighters. Tall, ribbed-sailed junks barely moved through the throng, their ragged reflections poised on the flat blue water like bats, whilst here and there smart navy launches and gigs of pale grey and gleaming brass scudded on small white bow waves as their perspiring coxswains strove to make sense out of the harbour regulations. The lush green heights of Victoria Peak were lost in a shimmering heat haze which mercifully hid the jumbled misery of squatters' shacks and refugee hovels which were beginning to invade what was once an area reserved solely for the rich, whose villas still managed to maintain a kind of lordly reserve in the world's most overcrowded city. The British naval dockyard, however, was quiet by any standards. Sunday was Sunday in any language, and apart from a few gloomy watchkeepers, the sleek destroyers and tall cruisers were deserted, as if the heat had winkled out every living thing from the high bridges and grim gun turrets. Hong Kong was still the most popular liberty port in the world, and daily the sailors of the American Seventh Fleet and men of the local British squadrons surged ashore in search of amusement. The Americans found particular pleasure in taking a taxi to the colony's border and recording the surly-faced communist guards on the other side of the wire. For months at a time, the men of the U.S. Seventh Fleet patrolled the Formosa Strait, watched over the countless shipping movements, and kept the seas open from Japan to as far south as Australia. Every mile of the red Chinese mainland presented some hidden menace. A fault of navigation or error of seamanship could spark off an international incident, which again could escalate to open conflict. Every man knew this, yet newcomers to Hong Kong gathered their Japanese laikas and hurried to this strange, defenceless-looking frontier between East and West to record for all time the actual face of the enemy. At this very moment, a giant aircraft carrier lay like a grey cliff in the centre of the anchorage. The fourth largest ship in the world, she represented merely by her presence the sleepless power of the Seventh Fleet. Other warships browsed at their moorings nearby, but the tourist steamers and bobbing harbour craft were only interested in the carrier, and even in the blazing heat, hands were busy with uptrained cameras. The puffing craft swam in the carrier's great shadow and devoured every item of interest. The bright, toy-like planes, wings folded, which just peeped over the edge of the flight deck, the maze of radio antennae and busy radar scanners, even the size of the ship alone was enough for the tourists, and every Chinese guide thanked the heavens for her visit. It was hardly surprising, therefore, that few observed the one warship moored on the fringe of the anchorage, aboard which, Sunday or not, there was a sign of life and activity. The submarine chaser, USS Hibiscus, was 23 years old, and in spite of her new coats of gleaming grey paint and freshly burnished brasswork, a closer inspection quickly laid bare the lie presented by the 3 months' refit, which had been completed only the previous day, when, shyly and unsurely, she had been coaxed from a deep dry dock and warped to her present mooring beneath the towering cranes of the loading jetty. Since her keel had touched the water for the first time in Portland, Oregon, she had lost count of the miles she had steamed, forgotten the dozen captains who had conned her through the bleak Atlantic in 1942 or dodged that crazed kamikaze in the Pacific.